At the palace, everything seemed normal at first. The same uniforms at the gate, at the doors. The same quietly efficient staff who guided her first to her guest room overlooking a small garden, and then, when she had showered and changed, to Miranda's suite. It was hard to remember, in this quiet, gracious place, that Bunny was dead, and all their peace in peril. She found herself expecting to see him coming down the corridor, his pleasantly foolish face lighting with a smile. Until she came face to face with Miranda and saw the devastation of that legendary beauty, Cecilia wondered how the same exquisite curves of bone, the same flawless skin, could now express a wasteland. After the rituals of greeting, when the staff had placed a tea set on the low table and withdrawn, Cecilia could wait no longer. No need, when the porcelain surface had already shattered.
Miranda, what have they told you about it? About who did it?
Miranda poured a cup of tea and handed it to Cecilia. The cup did not rattle on the saucer.
Nothing. I know the news media says it was the new Texas militia in retaliation for the executions.
Miranda, I don't think it was the new Tex militia.
Why?
I think it was someone inside.
Family?
Pater said that Bunny broke rules.
He did. He was so quiet, so compliant, it always seemed. But from the first time he brought me a tart he'd filched from the cook when we were children and showed me where we could hide from our governesses, he broke rules.
More important than that.
I know.
Miranda stared past Cecilia's left ear, as if she saw something a long way away, but was too tired to pay much attention.
Miranda!
I have a family. I have responsibilities. Children, grandchildren. You don't want me to forget that.
Yes.
Miranda turned that cameo face full on Cecilia.
I do not care. I do not care about the children. Not even Brun, whom I most desperately want to care about. I do not care about the grandchildren, those bastard brats forced on my daughter. I don't care about anything but Branthcombe. Bunny, whom, in this day and age, and in spite of rejuvenations and genetic selection and everything else we've invented to spare us the pain of living, I loved all my life from the time he brought me that cherry tart and we ate it in alternate bites sitting on the back stairs. I loved him. It was a miracle to me that he loved me, that he survived the hunting season we still make our young people go through, that he remembered me after my years in seclusion at Cypress Hill, that he married me and fathered my children, and no matter what, stayed loyal and decent and...
My dear.
Cecilia reached out, uncertain. But Miranda didn't recoil, and leaned into her as if Cecilia were her mother or her aunt. The sobs went on a long time.
Damnation, I thought I was over it.
I don't think you can get over it.
No. Not really. But over it enough to function. You're right. I have to do that much. But I really do not know how.
Your advisors?
Miranda gave Cecilia a sideways glance.
Are vultures. You, never having married, may not realize just how complicated the situation is. Your estate is all yours, and you have the disposal of it.
When my ham-fisted relatives don't interfere.
True. But what I have is Bunny's legacy in several separate realms, some of which I stayed out of. The political...
Surely no one expects you to take over as Speaker.
No. Everyone is sure that the political realm is the one I know least about. More's the pity, since I actually do understand it and could take it over if they'd only let me.
Cecilia managed not to gape by a small margin. Then she thought of Lorenza, who certainly had been, and repressed a shiver.
Lorenza. Now there was another case of backstage expertise. She and I used to play the most delicate games of power. It would bore you, Cecilia, unless you could think of it in equestrian terms, but if you could imagine yourself on a very, very advanced horse, which despised you, but had, for some reason, agreed to obey exactly your commands.
I had one like that.
We are not talking horses. Did you have a fence? Ancient sport, derived from an ancient method of warfare, sword fighting, also called fencing.
No.
Cecilia had just spent a half hour comforting a woman in collapse, and now she was being questioned like a schoolgirl about a sport she had always considered supremely silly.
I don't, fence.
Miranda stood and moved restlessly about the room.
You should. Fencing, if you knew anything about it, is the ideal metaphor for what Lorenza and I did, just as Bunny and her brother Piercy. But no, you don't know the terms.
Cecilia felt her temper gathering like a boil behind her eyes. She squeezed them hard shut.
Miranda, I know you're grieving. It was good for you to cry. But please, quit treating me like a silly, horse-crazy schoolgirl.
But you are. You always have been. You refused to grow up, just like Brun that way. It was ridiculous of Bunny to send Brun to you, of all people.
You blame me for Brun?
Not really. I mean, intellectually, I know we chose her genetic type. We chose to increase the risk-taking and the responsiveness. But there you were, such a model for such a girl. Every hunting season, egging her on over bigger fences as if horses were all that mattered. And what did it get her? To take someone like you for a model. That degradation.
She isn't like me.
She's not horse crazy, no. But that, that stubborn insouciance, that willingness to shed responsibility.
I didn't know you considered me irresponsible.
Not in everything, of course. But no sense of family, no loyalty to the familias. And she pulled that harebrained stunt to rescue you. She could have been killed then.
Something tapped at the alarms in Cecilia's brain, a tiny hammering.
I didn't ask her to. I couldn't. She just
loved you.
She loved her family. And you didn't need rescuing.
No. No, I never did.
For a long moment, she stood motionless. Cecilia found it hard to breathe.
Carter Science said we provided the wrong models for Brun. She told Bunny that, in the planning for Brun's rescue. I just can't understand her, though she's my child.
How about the rest of the family? Buttons and Sarah?
Are wonderfully helpful as far as they can be. Buttons, of course, expected to take over as his father's heir. But Bunny's younger brother, Harless, you remember him?
Cecilia nodded. Harless had all the arrogance, all the faux aristocratic foppery, and a third less sense than Bunny had had. Bunny could always go in an instant from the foolish fox-hunting lord of the manor to the sensible, practical, and very capable politician. Harless was Harless, all surface and no substance.
Harless is challenging the family structure, and I'm not sure Buttons can stop him. He's acquired an astonishing amount of stock in several of the corporations. Even old Trima left him her shares.
Will you be all right?
Probably, but I'm going to lose a lot. And I wanted it for Brun, for her and the twins. She needs a safe place. Cerealis would have been perfect.
Hollis isn't taking Cerealis.
He's trying. Oh, you'll always be welcome, Miranda, of course. You'll always have a place, but it was family property, not Bunny's alone. As if I would go there to lurk in the apartment he so generously offered while he strides about pretending to be lord of the manor.
And what are you doing about it? I assume you have some plan.
Yes. But I haven't decided. It would mean tearing up much that Bunny built. Family relationships, friendships, alliances. I can call on my family.
Of the founding families, Miranda's had been known first for information management and later for the development and manufacture of a variety of devices that were to the ordinary computer, as a top event horse was to a child's pony.
But it was Bunny's, and it's rightfully yours.
Ceci, you don't understand how threadbare the fabric has become since you exposed Kentry and Lorenza. I suppose it had begun before, but that's when it became obvious. Bunny and I, and Kevil, were holding an alliance of families by the skin of our teeth. All those years of social connections, business connections, and Kevil's legal skills and intuition. But the crises kept knocking it out of balance. Kentry's abdication, that patchcock mess, the scare about bad rejuvenation drugs and the Moraline-Consoline family collapse, and then Brun's abduction.
And I went back to Rotterdam to play with horses.
Yes. I understand it, in a way. People want to do the work they love, marry and have children, have some fun. But if too many people do that, Cecilia, it leaves gaps for people who want power for its own sake, and who may use it in ways that later degrade your life.
How is Kevil?
Alive. He's still not himself. He may never be, the doctors say. And without Bunny, or me, if I could only find a way. He doesn't have the backing to do what he did for us before.
I should visit him.
Yes, you should. You should tell him what you told me, with all the names you know. He might know something useful, something that would give us leverage.
And Brun?
Brun has a crazy notion of changing her identity, going to the Gwenessi and getting a rejuve and biosculpt that will make her a new person from the bones out.
She doesn't want the children.
Would you? Oh, no, she doesn't want them. I don't want them myself, really. Bunny did. Bunny had some crazy idea that they could grow up to prove their existence wasn't a disaster, but it is.
What are they like?
Babies. Toddlers, really, at this point. Neither looks like anyone in our family, and they aren't identical. One has the brightest red hair I ever saw, and the other's is brown. Brun says one of the men was a redhead.
Cecilia noticed that Miranda had not used names.
The gene scan showed some interesting anomalies. According to one geneticist, who's also looked at the women and other children, these people were seriously inbred with a lot of undesirable recessives concentrated. Of course, we had the boys treated at once, although it was too late for a complete washout.
What do you call them?
We don't, actually, have names. Brun never did, and she refuses to talk about it. The nurses call them Red and Brownie. I know those are names for dogs or ponies, not boys. Nicknames at best. I just don't... Bunny and I had been talking about it when he was killed. Would you like to see them?
Of course.
Miranda paused just before the open door. Cecilia looked in. Two young women in colorful smocks, a floor strewn with toys, and two sturdy toddlers. One, the redhead, was bouncing up and down, clapping his hands. The other, sitting in a scatter of blocks, looked quickly toward the door, grinning. They were normal, happy children, not monsters. Children who were more than lit fuses, who were potentially normal, if only they didn't grow up burdened with a past they had not made.
You have to send them away. There are people who want children and don't have them. There are places where these boys will be treasured as they should be.
Bunny said...
Bunny's dead. They're alive. They can have a good future. And the universe is big enough that they need not be anyone's pawns in some power game.
Brun wants to... She said... She doesn't want to hate them, but she can't live with them around. But neither of us can face the thought of an orphanage.
She's right. You said we were alike. We may be that much. If I had borne them in her circumstances, I'd have to give them up. It's a big universe. They need never know.
Cecilia left Miranda in the doorway and went on into the room, nodding to the nurses and sitting on the floor. Red, his hair an orange flame, put a fat thumb in his mouth, but Brownie grinned at her. Cecilia pulled out the ring of keys from the stable. His grin widened and he came to her, grabbing for the keys. Though he looked little like Brun, his boldness and the sparkle in his blue eyes suggested Brun's attitudes.
Lady Cecilia.
Cecilia turned back toward the doorway.
You look well?
Brun looked well, physically. Her tall body trim and fit, her tumbled gold curls in a riot around her head. But the clear gaze was shadowed, darkening when she looked at the boys.
Oh, I'm fine. Considering everything.
I agree with you and your mother. These boys need a proper home, not to mention names.
Brun's face stiffened, then she grinned.
Still tactful, I see.
As ever. My dear, I'm almost 90, and rejuvenation did nothing to soften my personality. Why don't we do it today?
Today?
Both Miranda and Brun looked shocked. So did the nurses.
But what will you do with them?
Take them to a safe and loving home. Brun, you've known me all your life. Have I ever lied to you?
Brun shook her head, tears rising in her eyes. Miranda opened her mouth to speak, but Cecilia waved her down.
I have told you the truth even when it wasn't what you wanted to hear. I tell you the truth now. If you let me have these boys, I will see to it that they find a good home. I will do it myself.
But your schedule...
is my own. Miranda, you were twitting me with my self-indulgence. This is what self-indulgence is good for. I can help you right now because I have no other obligations in the way. Please let me.
Brun looked down, then nodded. Cecilia could see the gleam of tears in her eyes. Miranda stared at Cecilia a long moment.
All right. And I still have money for them. A start in a new life.
Good.
Cecilia tried to think what next. She had said today without really thinking what that would mean. But now the two nursemaids were watching her, waiting for orders. She had no idea how long it took to pack up two children or where to take them. But she knew she must not hesitate. She turned to the nursemaids.
Are you full-time employees? And would you be able to travel for a month or so?
Yes, ma'am. We're from Cerealis originally, but we thought we'd be staying for years.
Then will you please start packing, or have someone help you pack the boys' things? I need to talk to Miranda and make some arrangements.
She would need a bigger ship. A momentary pang, when she thought of how easy it would have been with Sweet Delight and Harris Serrano to take the twins and their nursemaids anywhere. She couldn't make reservations on a commercial liner. Too much chance of publicity. She'd have to lease a ship and crew. No, to start with, she'd need another room. Set of rooms, in her hotel. She'd made reservations for one. Or perhaps another hotel. Ideas whirled through her head like leaves before a wind.
Miranda, let's go to your suite. We have business.
Yes, Cecilia.
Miranda nodded at the nursemaids, already beginning to gather toys.
I'll send a maid in to do the packing. Just be sure the boys are clean and dressed, and I'll take care of your salaries and references.
Then she led the way to her suite. Brun came along with them, her face once more stiff with misery.
Do you have any notion where you're going with them?
The thought had come as Cecilia walked down the passage.
Yes. I know the perfect planet, and probably the perfect couple.
Do you want to know? Brun sat, hunched, her eyes on the carpet.
Not now. Later, maybe.
Fine, then. Miranda, I'll need the use of your comm set.
I'll just call Poisson.
No, I'll make the reservations myself.
I have resources.
You said you were feuding with Bunny's brother.
In my own right. At least let me help.
Of course.
Cecilia turned politely to Brun as Miranda opened a line to her bank.
Brun, have you heard from that girl, Hazel, wasn't it, lately?
I worry about her. She seems to be doing fine for someone who's been through so much, but she has never admitted how bad it was. She keeps wanting to get me to meet with that ranger's wife, Prima Bowie.
Why?
Oh, I don't know. Hazel liked her, I think. She said she was kind. Hazel feels sorry for her being a stranger in our society. But she chose it. She wasn't abducted.
Are they all still together, all those women?
As far as I know, I don't really care.
I've deposited a lump sum in your account, Cecilia.
I can send more later if...
Don't worry about it. Tell me, do the maids take the boys out to play, in a park or anything?
Not off the grounds. The news media are bad enough as it is.
Then how about palace employees with children? Are there any?
I'm sure there are, but I don't know who...
Perhaps the maids will. We don't want publicity when we take the children out.
The little crocodile of children from Briary Meadows Primary School, being herded through the public rooms as part of their field trip, acquired a short tail. They didn't pay much attention. They were tired of glass-fronted cases full of trophies, letters, gifts to this or that famous person by another famous person, the rooms of interesting furniture which they could not touch, the silken ropes on which they were not supposed to swing. The children had been promised a stop at Zifra's, the famous ice cream parlor, if they were good, and only a steady murmur of commands kept them from trampling one another on the way out the door. The nursemaids, now wearing the green smocks of adult helpers in the school, complete with dangling name tags, brought up the rear, each with a toddler on her hip. Outside, the remaining media scavengers waited for any sign of Brunn or her children. They had seen bright green buses with the school name arrive, and crowds of obvious school children arrive, teachers hustling them into neat lines, and adult volunteers scampering to catch the inevitable escapees. At least one such field trip arrived every day. The palace had always been a favorite tourist site, and busloads of children, retirees, and convention attendees showed up so often that no one in the press corps paid them any mind. Now, as the youngsters piled into the buses, and the harried adults counted, compared notes, and shut the doors, they ignored the confusion, keeping an eye out instead for the return of Lady Cecilia, whose limousine waited at the other end of the car park. A half hour later, Cecilia left, smiling into the HoloLens and accepting congratulations on her win in the senior trials. She fielded a couple of questions about her breeding program, expressed sympathy for Bunny's family, and stepped into the waiting limousine, which took her to the medical center, where Kevil Mahoney was still listed in critical condition. And later that afternoon, the two school volunteers, whose green smocks and name tags had been borrowed for a time, walked out of the service entrance with other palace staff who lived off-site. No one paid attention to them, either. Miranda listened to the silence and felt something shift inside her mind. She had not really been able to hear the twins, but knowing they were not there, that she could not hear them even if she walked down the hall, tipped her towards some distant horizon. She glanced at the clock. Surely Cecilia had not been able to get them off planet yet. She could check. She stopped, her hand outstretched to the comm unit.
No.
As if it were a robotic arm she were operating, she concentrated on her hand and brought it back to her lap. They were gone. They were gone forever. Lightness filled her, as if she were a transparent husk of herself. She might blow away. But of course that was nonsense. She was tired, very tired.
Mother?
Weight and darkness returned so suddenly she could hardly breathe.
Yes, Brunn? You do think they'll be all right? Of course. Cecilia is reliable in her own way, and she will make sure of it.
Brunn came into the room tentatively, as if she were unsure of her welcome.
Good. I feel... strange. Sit down. Have some tea.
Brunn sat as gingerly as she had come in. They nibbled pastries in silence for a while. Then Brunn set down her plate.
What's going to happen with the family holdings?
It's going to be very difficult. When your father mobilized the fleet to go after you, he antagonized a lot of people, his own family included.
Too much for one person.
It wasn't their daughter, and it wasn't your decision. It was his. But Harless gained ground with the rest of the family then. He'd already been working on it, claiming that Bunny was spending too much time and energy on council business and neglecting the family interests. He said Buttons was too young and inexperienced. He started demanding silly, time-wasting reports and nitpicking everything. Buttons has had a lot to learn in only a few years, but he's doing very well.
It's just that Harless promises he could do better. And now, well, he's determined to get Cerealis.
That's stupid. That's not profit. The place has never made a profit.
That's partly Harless's point. He claims it could if it were managed properly, which does not, of course, include fox hunting, or only as a commercial enterprise. He's strong on commercial enterprises. He thinks Cerealis would pay as a mature colony prospect.
Bring in colonists?
Yes. In his view, the planet is full of wasted space that ought to be put to profitable use. Buttons pointed out the agricultural areas, but he insists that this is not enough, and he's claiming that Bunny's title was only a life one. Kevil had been working on this before the attack, but now he can't help either.
I wonder if dear Uncle Harless had anything to do with the assassination.
No, dear. It was not Harless.
Mother, you know something. You know who did it.
I know it wasn't Harless.
You don't believe it was the new Texan?
No. Although that's still the official line, I do not.
Then who?
Brun, I am not having this conversation with you. Not now, at least. We need to talk about your father's family and their probable actions, and some of the other economic matters. These things must be dealt with now. Your father's murderers can wait.
The trail
will never be too cold. Brun, please. For once in your life, listen to me. We must be careful.
I want to go to the Guernsey Republic.
No. I need you here.
For what? An exhibition?
No. For an ally. If we are to defend our position, we must all help. Your sisters are already busy, up to their eyeballs and their family responsibilities, but trying to line up support. Buttons and Sarah are both working flat out. I need help. Someone whose loyalty is undoubted. I need you.
Oh.
You were willing enough to help Cecilia.
You really need me?
Miranda gave her a sharp look.
Of course. No. Let me say that more precisely. Yes, I need you. No one else can do what you can. No one else in the family has the training and experience.
You're serious? But you've never needed me. I'm just the troublemaker.
No. You're the one who can survive trouble. Brun, please. Help me.
I don't know if I can.
You can if you will. I want to find who murdered your father, and who is trying to dismantle the Familius Regnant, and for what purpose. I'm not sure they are the same person or organization, but they might well be.
Brun watched her perfect, serene, immaculate mother with amazement. For her whole life, she had seen her mother as the icon everyone thought her. Her father was the active one, the doer and maker and shaper of events. Her mother smoothed his way by smiling and standing by. Now she saw the real person behind the label of mother and Bunny Thornbuckle's wife. A woman as intelligent, tough, and knowledgeable as her father had ever been. As dangerous, perhaps, as Lorenza had been. From the gleam in Miranda's eye, her mother had just noticed that recognition and was enjoying the surprise.
I made no mistake picking Brun Meager for my nom de guerre.
Quite so. I'm glad you recognize it. Now, are you with me?
Yes, if I can.
You can. Not all at once, but let me go on here. I warned your father, after that disgraceful affair on Patchcock, to beware of his relatives doing what that Moraline woman did. Granted, her brothers deserved it, but others could do the same with less reason. He was sure he had it taken care of, in part because old Victor Barraclough had always been his friend and mentor. But about the time of the Xavier invasion, he and Kevil found irregularities. Purchases of company shares they couldn't put a name to, changes in some of the boards of directors which didn't make sense. The military crisis had to come first, of course, And after that, with proof of traitors in fleet, they were far more concerned with that and with Grand Council business. But what it's come down to is that Harless has enough shares and enough votes in various boards that he can make a plausible case that much of your father's estate was actually not his personally. I think he'd fiddled the files, but I haven't had time to work on it. And I can't do it here.
Could you do it at Appledale?
Not really. I need to go to Cerealis. That's where we stored the backup data. Your father thought I was paranoid sometimes, but I insisted that we take a complete readout every half year and just archive it. I think that's why Harless is so determined to get Cerealis. He suspects that the data are there somewhere.
Then you should go to Cerealis. He can't keep you away, can he?
Not yet. But I couldn't leave you alone here.
You wanted my help, let me give it. Nothing's likely to happen at the next Grand Council meeting anyway. They're probably still in shock and they'll waffle for days.
I'm not so sure. That Consuline fellow got himself elected interim speaker.
Whatever happens can't matter as much as stopping Harless. Go on. I'll attend the council meeting and let you know what happens. Promise.
Brunn reached over and patted her mother's arm.
We aren't going to let Harless take everything, and we aren't going to let some idiot Consuline ruin the Familius. If that's what's happening.
Sometimes, Brunn, you are remarkably like your father.
Sorry.
No, don't be. All right. First, we'll clear out of here. Then I'll go to Cerealis.
On the way to the hospital, Cecilia contacted her hotel to reassure the front staff that the two young women and two children were the individuals she had authorized to register in her name. Another two bedrooms, on practically no notice, turned out to be no problem. Cecilia grinned to herself. She had been so wise to invest in a hotel here on Castle Rock, rather than depending on the hospitality of friends. When she got to the hospital, she was told that she had just missed George. She went upstairs and stood in the corridor outside special care, looking at the motionless form in the bed. He looked wretched. She wondered if she had looked as bad. He wasn't conscious, they told her. They were still struggling to control the pressure on his brain, and he was deeply sedated, except for weekly checks of neurological function. Cecilia blinked back tears, remembering herself in that drug-induced coma, wondering if Kevil were more conscious than they realized, and silently promised him she would return and get him out of there no matter what. She found it hard to leave, but she had something even more urgent to do. At the Laurels, she stopped at the concierge's desk to ask for assistance in leasing a yacht. The Laurels expected such requests. It took only a moment for the concierge to connect Cecilia to the booking agent for All Systems Leasing. Her inspiration had been her nephew Ronnie. Ronnie and Rafaela, as newlyweds, had taken off for the frontier to Exet 24, a world newly opened to colonization. Cecilia hoped it would have a more euphonious name before it qualified for full membership in the Familius. At last report, Ronnie and Rafa had no children yet, but were hoping. Cecilia wasn't sure who was hoping, the young people or their parents, but she remembered Rafa's problem-solving abilities and was sure that Rafa could find the boys a good home if she didn't want them herself. But this meant a long trip, 6 weeks at least. She discussed the route with the leasing agent and ordered the premium platinum package of consumables. She didn't mind doing Bunny's family this service, but she wanted fresh food again. On Miranda's advice, Cecilia hired three more nursemaids. One wanted to emigrate and was glad to accept a colony share in lieu of salary. She brought along her own children, a 2- and a 4-year-old. 5 people to care for 4 children might be overdoing it, but Cecilia didn't intend to wash a single diaper or wipe a single drippy nose. By midnight, Cecilia had arranged everything. She had discussed with the nursemaids what clothes would be needed for the voyage and for 6 months afterward. She didn't know how easy it would be to find children's clothes on a colony world. She set up credit lines so that purchases by the nursemaids would not be traceable to her or to Miranda. Then she fell into bed with a glow of conscious virtue. When the twins woke at 2 a.m, she pulled a pillow over her head and went back to sleep. That part of it was someone else's problem. By the time they boosted from Rockhouse Major, Cecilia felt sure that no one had suspected anything. As far as anyone outside the palace knew, the twins were still there. Cecilia pored over their medical records in her stateroom and came to the same conclusion as the doctors and psychologists. Normal children, who could expect to have normal lives. The real question was, should she tell Rafaela and Ronnie who they really were? In her own mind, the boys should not know. That they were adopted, yes, but not that their fathers had raped their mother and kept her captive. Of course, they must have access to their medical records someday. Advances in therapy might make it possible to finish cleaning up their genome. She saw moral and emotional shoals in either direction. Exet Colony 24 looked from space like a paradise. Sapphire seas and emerald forests, tawny drylands and olive savannas, all spatched and streaked with white water vapor clouds. The colony spaceport, in contrast, was a dirty little dump in Cecilia's view. Her chartered yacht had its own shuttle, whose wide viewscreen gave a clear view of the mess. Discarded cargo containers lay scattered near either end of the runway. The single runway. The spaceport buildings were ugly piles, too much like the Patchcock port. The white plumes of cement factories, the lime kilns where limestone and shale were converted to cement for construction, lay gently on a background of rich green forest in the near distance. Customs consisted of a harried young woman whose only concern was whether the new arrivals had colony shares.
I don't need a colony share. I'm not staying. I'm just here to visit.
The young woman glared, took Cecilia's IDs, and inserted them in a machine. After a moment, she turned to give Cecilia a long look.
You're not staying?
I'm not staying, no. I'm here to visit my nephew and his wife, Ronald Van Dormer.
Ah! Ronnie, won't you say so?
I tried.
He's a doofus, but now you can go over.
She pointed out the office, a two-story cube of concrete. Like most colonies, this one had been given a head start by its investors. The spaceport town had a small grid of paved streets and a larger grid of graveled ones. The first 100 or so buildings had been put up of substantial materials, in this case, concrete blocks. Beyond that were rickety constructions that Cecilia could only call shacks, crudely built of raw timber. Cecilia noticed, as she walked along, the number of people who were carrying things by hand, the absence of hand trucks, let alone vehicles. The two-story building had a low wall enclosing a courtyard to one side, where a group of men were working on some piece of machinery she didn't understand. She started to speak up and ask them about Ronnie, when one of the faces in the group suddenly looked familiar.
Ronnie?
Cecilia blinked in the brilliant sunlight, and it still was, in face. The glossy young aristocrat, who had always been just one hair from a dandy, stood there in tan work shirt and pants, with smears of mud or grease on both. She couldn't even tell what color his boots had been. But it was Ronnie, as handsome as ever, or more so. Before she could call out, he turned and went inside. The men went back to doing something with machinery and wood. She followed him inside to a rough-walled room with a concrete floor and found him jotting something down on a desk comp.
Ronnie!
He looked up. Then his eyes widened.
Aunt Cecilia!
I sent word!
We never got it. It's probably in the batch somewhere, but everyone's been too busy.
Ronnie looked out the window at the bustle in the courtyard. Cecilia eyed him. This was not a change she had ever expected to see in Ronnie. She wondered why he hadn't said anything about Bunny's death or asked about Brun.
It looks like a lot of work.
It is. It's not something I thought I'd ever be doing, to tell you the truth.
Who's your colony governor?
I am, now that Misktoff ran off.
Ran off?
Yes, it's easy enough. He stowed away on an outbound flight with most of our negotiable resources.
But that's criminal.
So it is. but I didn't see any police force around to stop him, and we don't have Ansible access down here. No money, no communications.
Oh. Perhaps he didn't know about Bunny's assassination. Cecilia took another look around the room. Not an office, exactly. She saw furniture she recognized from Rafa's mother's summer cottage. A dining room table covered with data cubes and books. A sofa piled with more books and sheets of plastic and paper that looked like construction drawings. Over everything, a layer of gritty gray dust and ash.
But we're doing well, considering. It's just, there's a lot I didn't know. Don't know yet. You know, Aunt Cecilia, no matter how many cubes you study, there's always something...
For instance?
Well, the cement plants are working all right, and we've got plenty of sand and gravel, so we're fine for unreinforced construction. But my cube said unreinforced concrete is dangerous.
What does your colony engineering team say?
Engineering team? We haven't one. I know the prospectus says we do, but we don't. Aunt Ceci, 90% of our population are low-level workers, which makes sense. But these people are low-level workers in a high-level system. They're used to a more advanced infrastructure. They know how to do their work in a world where everything's already set up, not how to work from scratch. The farmers know how to grow crops and big fields, but they don't know how to level them. The plumbers know how to connect pipes in standard modular buildings, but they don't know how to set up a plumbing system from scratch. That's what the engineering team is supposed to do, make the connection between standard designs and standard practices, and the conditions we have locally, but we don't have one.
If it's that bad, why don't you leave?
We don't want to leave, Aunt Cecilia. We want to make it work. We sank all our money in it, even the wedding presents.
Even your reserves?
Well, not at first, but when Mishktov ran off, we had to do something. We could have bought ourselves out and run home like silly children, but the colony needed help. So we blew the last on enough to keep the rest alive while we worked it out.
This was a very different Ronnie from the spoiled boy she'd known. Not a hint of petulance. He'd been dumped into trouble, and he was going to handle it. How's Rafa?
She's fine. Tired, though. She's trying to get a school started, but it's hard. The parents say they're too busy. They need the children at home.
Don't these colony groups include trained teachers?
On paper, yes. There's a lot I didn't know in the old days. I thought every standard colony dropped with prefab housing. The 5-year contract engineering team, the education and medical backups that are on the contract.
And they don't?
No. At least right before Mishktov ran off, while we still had the credit for it, I made some inquiries and found that many colonies are shorted. But they're stuck on some planet, mostly uneducated people who haven't a clue who to contact in the colonial office. No one ever knows. Even me. I sent messages out, but never got any back. We haven't heard from our families in over a year, though we've scraped up enough to piggyback messages to them 3 times.
Well, Ronnie, I may have added to your burdens, but... Rafa came through the door like a burst of spring breeze.
Cecilia, I'm so glad to see you. Oh, the only bad thing about this is that I miss my friend sometimes.
The girl, no, young woman, looked healthy enough and genuinely glad to see her. Cecilia braced herself for what she must do.
Rafaela, Ronnie, have you heard about Bunny?
Bunny? No. What's wrong?
He was assassinated several months ago, supposedly by allies of the men executed after Brun's capture.
Wait, Brun was captured? By whom? Is she all right?
Cecilia could hardly believe they didn't know. She gave them a quick review of what had happened.
So you see, when I started thinking of a good home for the babies, I thought of you. I was sure you could find a home for them.
Brun's babies?
Now she'd done it. Yes.
Of course I want them. We do, don't we, Ron?
Of course. I don't exactly know how, but we'll manage.
I've brought along nursemaids, including one with 2 children of her own who wants to stay, and some money Miranda sent for their education later.
If it's enough to hire a teacher, we can start that school.
Cecilia had no idea if it was enough, but she would pry the necessary out of Rafa and Ronnie's parents if she had to. She would also, she thought, find out why incoming messages, including hers, weren't getting through.
Where are the babies?
Still in the shuttle. I doubt I'd ever have gotten them past that person in the terminal.
Oh, Ganna. She was Mixtoff's girlfriend. And he left her here, marooned her. She thought she was going to be the governor's lady and lord it over everyone. But here she is, and she hates everybody.
Except handsome men. Lady Cecilia, you should see how she fawns on Ronnie. I know he's not susceptible, but it's a little disgusting sometimes.
It's handy when I want something. Come on, let's get those babies out of the shuttle. If I have babies crawling all over me, I'll bet Ganna finds me less attractive.
By the time she left again, Cecilia knew that more was wrong with Exet 24 than one scoundrelly governor and a missing engineering team. The nursemaids had been understandably wide-eyed at the conditions on the planet, and Cecilia had had some difficulty persuading them to stay until she returned.
I'll find out why messages aren't getting through, Ronnie, and find you some of the experts you need. You've done wonderfully.
She didn't really believe that, but the young couple had tried and weren't whining, and that counted for a lot in her private grade book.
It'll be a few months, you understand.
That's what they all say.
All the way to Cerealis, Miranda had planned what to do. If she tried to call on her family's expertise, Harless might find out and would certainly do his best to stop her. She had to assume he'd figure it out. She had to assume she had only a limited lead before he found some way of separating her from the data she needed to explore. Bunny had teased her at first when she insisted on having her own archives separate from the family, in machines not physically connected to anything but a solar power supply.
Paranoia runs in the meager family line.
She pressed her lips together tightly, remembering that laugh and her scornful reply. She had been so young, so sure of herself.
And so right.
Not for nothing had her family been in information technology for centuries. She had insisted. Bunny had given in. Her personal and very complete archives lay not at the big house, though she kept a blind copy there as a decoy, but in a remote hunting lodge. Every hunting season, and in between, if they were in residence, she added another set of records, stripping the current logs. The staff at Cerealis met her with the sympathy and respect she'd expected. Harless might have local spies and supporters, but they wouldn't show themselves yet. She spent the first few days, as anyone would expect, taking sympathy calls and answering what questions she could about the future of their world. That first evening, alone in the big room she had once shared, her mind wandered back to Cecilia's visit.
Where did she take the twins? She seemed to know exactly where she was going. Well, that's Cecilia, and always has been, although it usually involves a horse.
But before the twins, she'd said something about Bunny's killers, about some plot. Miranda struggled to remember, past the confusion of the last weeks, the urgency of her concern about the estate, and the travel-induced headache. Finally, she shrugged and gave up for the night. The name didn't come to her until she was at the hunting lodge far north of the main house, where the snow still lay deep on the shadowed sides of the mountains. She'd made copies of all the critical data, astonishing herself with the number of cubes it took to hold it all, and then packed it neatly into her carry-all for the flight back. It was too late that day. She didn't want to risk a night flight, as tired as she was, so she'd heated up one of the frozen lumps of soup and settled in by the fireplace with a mug of soup and another of cocoa. She felt not smug exactly, but pleased with herself. She had the backups, which she could work on at the main house, and her surveillance link showed no ships in the system. That meant Harless could not possibly get there in time to discover her hiding place. Her mind wandered off to the twins again, and from there to Cecilia, and then, as if a cube were playing, her memory handed her the first part of their conversation. Not the New Tex militia, Well, she'd been doubtful of that herself, though they were certainly capable of killing and maiming.
Peter Oregiemos?
Cecilia hadn't mentioned it, and perhaps didn't know it. But Peter had once wanted to marry her. She hadn't loved him. He was older than Bunny, and fussy pomposity had never attracted her. But he'd been convinced she married Bunny just for his money. He'd even said so, one afternoon in the Rose Garden. She hadn't quite smacked his face, but she'd been tempted.
Peter? Could it be?
She couldn't imagine him doing it himself, except perhaps with a small sword. He had been quite a fencer in his day, and probably kept it up. And Cecilia might have misunderstood.
What could be the reason? What could Peter gain from killing Bunny? Or having him killed?
She did not realize, until the handle snapped off the cocoa mug, just how agitated she was. Luckily, the cocoa had cooled. She wiped up the mess, put the broken bits in the trash she'd take back to the main house, and tried to quiet the racing of her heart. Pater was, after all, a rejuvenant. Not merely someone who had had rejuvenations, as she and Bunny had had, but someone who felt threatened by those who hadn't. She remembered seven at least, years ago, an argument about rejuvenance and ageists at one of Chemtree's parties, when Pater had insisted very loudly that it would end in bloodshed.
They will kill us out of envy, or we will kill them in self-defense.
And then some other man had hustled him away and sobered him up.
Would he have had Bunny killed for that? Is he one of a group who would have done it?
Miranda tried to turn off these thoughts. She needed rest. She had a long flight the next morning and a lot of work to do after it. But she lay long awake, tossing, her stomach roiling with anger. The next day, back in the main house, she walked past the glass cases of antique weapons, as she had done so often before, and paused. Bunny had fenced only because it was an expected social skill, keeping her company in the sal as she kept him company in the hunting field. But he had had a strange passion for old weapons, both blades and firearms. It was a mixed collection, though displayed with all the organization possible. Long blades in this case, short blades in that one, short-barreled firearms here, long-barreled ones there. Glass-topped floor cabinets with helmets and breastplates and mailed gloves. Miranda stopped in front of the wall-hung case of swords. The broadest blades below, the single broadsword, the two sabers, one straight and one curved slightly, two schlägers, a rapier, five épées, four foils, the latter displayed in pairs, angled and opposing, their tips crossed. On a whim, Miranda opened the case and took down the broadsword, turning its blade to the light to see the dappled pattern of refolded and beaten steel layers. She rapped it with her knuckles. Its edge was still sharp enough to cut. She wished she knew its history. Bunny had suspected it of being an ancient reproduction from an early space era, not a genuine pre-space relic. But when they'd done a forensic scan on it, there'd been human blood in the runes incising the blade. Only a trace, and the scans weren't able to date it closer than a couple of hundred years, but she'd always wondered. The Schlägers, at least, were old. One was certainly 20th century old reckoning. But while she had drilled with such blades, they hadn't ever warmed her interest. The rapier, so seemingly similar, did. This one, with a graceful swept hilt, balanced easily when she lifted it out and swung it around. She put it back almost guiltily.
What am I thinking? Nothing. Nothing at all.
She closed the case and locked it. These were priceless antiques, not toys. If she wanted to practice, the sal held modern weapons and equipment far better suited for her sport. And she had no time. She headed back to the big square office that had been Bunny's estate office and was now her workplace as she tried to figure out just what Harless had done. Lucy Sweeza had expected the furor over her cousin Esme's engagement to an outlander to dispel interest in her own plans, but somehow the discussion at the dinner table spilled over onto her. She had a mouthful of corn soup when Papa Stefan opened with a volley of complaints about the quarterly accounts.
And that ridiculous expense for equipment we don't need. To develop a foreign market we've done very well without for centuries. We're not that sort of people, is what I say. Lucy, you can't tell me this was all Esmea's idea.
Lucy swallowed quickly, burning her throat on the soup.
Oh, no, Papa Stefan. But we were talking about the future of her herd, and I had researched.
Researched? You don't know what research is. You are seduced by all those Outlander magazines you read. If my mother were still alive...
Well, she's not. Esme's the lamb bride, and she approves. The Outlanders need our stock's genetic input, and we need theirs.
You interrupted me.
You interrupted me first. And the genetic equipment was my idea, and is my responsibility. And I did check with the land bride, who approves the expenses which she thoroughly understood.
Not like a land bride at all. A land bride should conserve resources, not waste them on crackpot schemes.
Like the Barley River Irrigation Project?
That was Sonny, who could never resist a dig about Papa Stefan's one big mistake. As a young man, he'd been convinced that irrigation of dry coastal land with water from the barley would be practical and profitable. His mother, then only newly land bride, had allowed him enough money to unbalance the Estancia budget for a decade.
It's not the same thing at all.
It's not. My idea is on schedule and on budget. And in fact, it is costing us less than a land bride approved because I got support from other breeders.
Which is another thing. You went outside the family to bring in outsiders.
Our allies for generations. After all, I am marrying Philip.
That had slipped out, not at the moment she'd planned.
Philip? Philip who?
Philip Vicarios.
Sonny's quick glance admonished Lucy. Papa Stefan stared a moment, then turned to look at Casimir and Berthold.
She's marrying a Vicarios?
Lucy had not really doubted what Esme told her, but now a chill sank through her as she saw in their faces additional confirmation.
She has Esme's approval, I understand.
And you, Cassie?
The family is our ally. Paul is my friend.
Does she know?
Children, you may be excused.
The younger cousins, eyes already wide, scrambled away from the table with only the briefest duck of the head to the elders. Lucy's younger brother gave her a look that meant she would be ambushed later and expected to tell all.
I know. Esmea told me. She said it didn't matter, that she held no grudge against the family, and if Philip was kind...
Kind? Marriage is not about kindness.
It is. Not that you would know.
Quiet!
Casimir rarely interrupted at these family fights, but this time he did, with all the power of command built over years of active service.
Too much is at stake here to rehash old battles or waste energy and patience yelling at each other. As the land bride's trustee, I know that she did in fact approve Lucy's desire to marry Philip Vicarios. She did, in fact, approve Lucy's expenditure of equipment to allow us to export gene stock, and her reasons were sound enough to convince me and the other trustees that this was a good idea. This is not, after all, the real issue. The real issue is the land bride wants to marry an outlander and continue to live off-planet, and the other landholders would like to use this as an excuse to reduce our influence in the guild. I see no chance of changing Esme's mind, for all the reasons we know about. So, I suggest we turn our attention to minimizing the damage to the Suiza family and quit inflicting more on ourselves.
Lucy had not expected her Uncle Casimir to be so sensible. To her surprise, Papa Stefan went back to his meal, stabbing the sliced cantaloupe as if it were an enemy, but silent. Sonny sipped the rest of her soup in thoughtful silence. Berthold helped himself to a pile of potatoes in red sauce and began eating steadily. Casimir looked at Lucy.
Have you any more bombshells to drop, Lucy?
No, Uncle.
Did Esmea mention anything to you about passing on the land bride duties?
She did, in a way. But
Casimir tended his hands and looked over them at her.
She spoke of you. Did you agree?
I told her it was too soon. I'm only...
The age that two land brides were invested in the old days. A year older, in fact, than Sylvia.
Lucy had never heard of Sylvia, though she had, like all the children, memorized 100 years of land bride Suiza.
It may be that having her designate you land bride-to-be would help. That, plus your marriage to a Vicarios, would prove that the Suizas were not involved in interstellar politics.
Hobart glared at Oscar Moraline, former head of the Moraline branch of his sept.
You were outmaneuvered by Venezia. That fuzz-brained sister of yours cost us market share and dropped profits 28%.
It's not my fault if you...
Oh, yes, it is. Your daughter, Otala, what is it with the women in your family anyway? Goes herring off to Patchcock and gets herself killed. That's what started it. A daughter you didn't control any better than Bunny controlled Brune.
Oscar had flushed an ugly color. Hobart enjoyed that, as he always enjoyed exercising power.
No, Oscar, I can't trust you to do it right, whatever it is. I cannot give you a ministry. In a few years, I expect the public climate will change, and then, perhaps, we can find something for you.
You expect my vote and you aren't giving me anything?
I expect your vote because you know where your advantage lies. Even if they had it to give, you would get nothing out of that clique Bunny ran, and they do not have it to give. Not anymore.
Oscar glared, but subsided, as Hobart had known he would. If Oscar could get it through his head what the problem really was, he might be useful.
Whoever controls the rejuvenation process controls everything. As long as the public doesn't rebel against rejuves, we must take steps against the ageist conspiracies. The short lives, if they realize the danger they're in, outnumber us at this point and could be dangerous.
But Venezia says...
Venezia is a fool. Yes, something had gone wrong there, something serious. A benignity spy, if I understand the little that's been declassified. But it's not as bad as all that. Women are so excitable, not to mention sentimental. And Venezia in particular.
All she ever did was play with pottery.
Quite so. How could she know anything about the real world? She could not be expected to realize how many lives would be disrupted, prematurely ended with a shortage of rejuvenation drugs, because of her finicky insistence on exact procedures.
But Hobart, how do we get it back? How do we get her out of there?
By doing precisely what I tell you. I need your support at all the Grand Council sessions. I will let you know what I need you to say and how to vote. With more sympathetic, more cooperative ministers, we should be able to ease dear Venezia back into her supportive role.
She won't like it.
I don't care whether she does or not. I am not going to let one woman stand in the way of progress for the Consuline Sept.
Hobart looked forward to that moment, probably more than Oscar did. Venezia had been a constant nuisance at Sept board meetings, poking her nose into all sorts of inconvenient corners. She seemed to think she had a moral mission to clean up the whole Sept.
If Kimtre had not been a weak man, none of these disasters would have happened. He drugged his son into stupidity and then created those damned clones.
I don't see that cloning is such a bad thing.
No, nor do I, except that we have a rapidly growing population anyway. We don't need clones. We need sensible, strong men who know how to handle the hysterics. No offense.
Hobart eyed Oscar, but Oscar didn't mind if Hobart called his sister hysterical.
Now, Oscar... I want you to have a word with the Broderick Institute and tell them to do their homework a little better.
The Broderick Institute? What have they done?
Oscar, the Broderick Institute is where Dr. Margulis works.
Oscar still looked blank.
The same Dr. Margulis whose report on the so-called bad drugs coming out of Patchcock started a near panic in the market.
Oh, that Dr. Margulis... But I thought...
Please come up with more. And the man is a closet ageist, I'm sure, just looking for any excuse to scare people away from rejuvenation. Broderick has given him free rein for the past 15 years, and look what that so-called independent research has led to. It's cost you and me and the whole familius. He needs to be controlled. At the very least, someone needs to do impartial research showing how beneficial rejuve is. And since the Consuline Sept provides over 2/3 of the money to support the Broderick Institute, they need to be reminded of the importance of truly even-handed science.
They won't complain about academic freedom.
They're not a university. They're a privately funded research facility. If you're tactful, they'll get the point without blowing up. That's your job.
Oscar left, finally.
Idiots.
Hobart was surrounded by idiots and incompetents, and they all wanted something from him. He glanced at his desk and had his secretary send in Pater Origiemos. Another idiot. Minor family, major nuisance, but also a born bootlicker, and those could be useful. Pater came in looking smug about something. Hobart had no time for Pater's self-congratulation. Besides, he would be even smugger with more reason very shortly.
We have a problem coming up.
Pater's expression shifted quickly from smugness to concern.
As you know, I was elected temporary speaker at the emergency council meeting immediately after Lord Thornbuckle's assassination.
Pater nodded.
The next meeting will be crucial. If we are not to lapse back into the ineffective vacillation of the previous administration, if we're to meet the challenges that threaten us, we need to take action quickly. Will you help me?
Of course. What can I do?
In the long run, you can be my Minister of Foreign Affairs.
Hobart paused and enjoyed the sight of Pater completely silenced for once. He had not expected that high an honor. He would be the more willing to earn it.
But not immediately. First, there are changes in the bylaws which need to be approved. I'll give you the texts. I want your analysis of the probable response.
Of course, right away.
I'm calling the next meeting almost immediately. It would be unethical not to have a general meeting as quickly as possible.
Pater nodded like a child's toy. Hobart wondered if he even grasped the importance of that, if he realized how critical the timing was, how this haste would work to Consuline advantage. For an instant, Hobart thought of explaining it to him, sharing some of his data on family movements, his basis for knowing who could attend and thus how the votes would go. No. No. Better not even let Pater know how much he knew.
After that meeting, I'll be making some ministerial changes. Foreign affairs will be high on that list, but I can't give you an exact date. What you must understand is where the real threat is. It's not war, no matter what anyone says. We're large, strong, healthy, with a vigorous military. Well, mostly vigorous. Anton Lupescu was more than a little crazy, but that doesn't mean all his ideas were bad. He had the right idea about the military and war, for instance. If he'd been assigned to the rescue mission, do you suppose we'd have had any problem with leftover terrorists?
Pater shook his head. Hobart allowed himself a smile.
Of course not. He'd have made sure there weren't any. None of this idiocy of bringing back hundreds of women and children. Born troublemakers, every one of them. And to whom do we owe that diplomatic and political problem? Bunny Thornbuckle's friends, the Serranos, who, as we all know, have no direct loyalty to any of the chair-holding families.
But Hobart, none of the Fleet families do now.
Not directly, not now, but they did in the past. That's my point. I've read history. I know what's supposed to have happened. But how do we know that the Serranos weren't involved in the massacre of their patron family? What proof do we have?
Pater looked surprised, then thoughtful.
I hadn't ever considered that, but they're powerful.
Yes, thoroughly entrenched. And I'm sure there are decent, loyal soldiers among them, but overall, their influence is questionable. We need a fleet we can count on to crush any opponent, protect our shipping, protect the new worlds we need to open for our colonists.
After Pater left, Hobart stared out the window, musing. The minor families, Derringer, Hocklet, Tassi Leote, all that crowd, were yammering now for leadership and would probably follow anyone strong enough. Harless Thornbuckle, Bunny's own brother, wanted control of Bunny's estate bad enough to deal, though he probably wasn't trustworthy in the long run. If Kevil Mahoney had been capable, he might have talked some of the waverers into the other camp, but he was still in the medical center, and the opposition was no more than a confusion of Barraclough's, more intent on fighting over leadership within their sept than on threats from without. Since Mahoney wasn't on his side, just as well not to have him active at all. In the future, he expected to talk Mahoney over. The man needed a power base. It was purely an accident that he had been Bunny's friend. He could just as easily be Hobart's friend. With any luck, no one from Bunny's family would attend this Grand Council meeting anyway. They would expect this one to be unimportant, with the weak speaker elected to finish out Bunny's term. This was his window of opportunity. He could take hold of the weak, flaccid, rudderless ship of state, catch the winds of time, and take them all to a better future than anyone else saw. Hobart silenced his scheduler, toying with the idea of skipping his exercises for once. But habit had already brought him to his feet. Iagin, the swordmaster who supervised his own fencing coach, was there for his twice-annual analysis of Hobart's progress.